Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
War hunt, hunt.
Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
This is not the first time we've used this song.
We have it?
I feel like we've done it before.
It always makes me think of Rush Hour, which is kind of like it shouldn't, but it just does.
It was in the trailer, right?
It was in the movie. I don't remember.
Yeah, it was definitely in the movie. They're doing a Rush Hour TV show.
They are?
Yeah.
Does it have Jackie Chan?
No. Are you
kidding
me? Does
it have Chris Tucker?
No.
Then why? Because Brett Ratner is Brett Ratner involved?
It's on CBS. It's a reimagining of the hit feature film franchise. It's a buddy cop drama about a maverick LAPD detective and a by-the-book detective from Hong Kong.
Well, it sounds like the movie.
Sounds like the movie.
The first movie was very funny. After that, it really
wasn't. The series premiere was actually 4 days ago.
Oh, so it's already... How do I not...
Oh, wait, never mind. No. It's on March 31st. The trailer for the series premiere.
I was like, we work in this business. I should know when a TV show comes out.
Yeah, well, we should know when Rush Hour, one of my favorite movies of all time, comes out with the crappy version that is on TV. I don't know. It looks like it's action-packed. One of the best parts about Rush Hour was the huge stunts that they did.
Yeah.
And it looks like they do some cool stuff in the show, at least, like a helicopter crashes into some
TV
stuff.
TV stunts and effects just never, they can't compare to movies.
It.
They just don't have the time to do it either. So you can't spend an entire day setting up like two shots.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you can on a movie. So yeah, it's probably going to suck. Whatever.
Whatever.
Anyway, how's it?
You guys are listening to The Command Zone. I'm Jimmy Wong.
It's Josh Lee Kwai.
I'm a little sick, so it's going to be a short episode today, folks.
But he's still here. He's powering through it.
He's been in bed
basically for like a couple of days now.
Yeah, I've contributed literally nothing to the world for a couple of days. It's been pretty awful.
Well, that's because you're contagious. So you don't want to contribute only germs to the world or viruses or whatever it is.
That would be awful.
Yeah, so thank you. From on behalf of the world, thank you.
On behalf of me just sweating it out in bed every night, I hate it.
That sounds horrible. Well, we also have a little bit of a snafu because we thought that tonight we were going to have a special guest, the Reverend in Fuego.
In person.
In person, because we thought he was in L.A. to shoot the Wheel of Fortune. He's on the Wheel of Fortune, and after that, he was going to come on and be on our show. And today I texted him. I was like, we're still on for tonight, right? And he's like, no, dude, I'm not in town until next week. So,
whoops.
Yeah, whoops. We thought we were going to have Rev. Rev is actually going to be next week.
We're going to have to wait 7 new days instead of 7 new cards for him.
Seven new days.
Because of the Wheel of Fortune. We're not talking about the card. He actually is going to be a guest on the show, which is really exciting. I guess you can apply and they can accept you. And then this happened. I don't know if he found out like 5-6 months ago. I don't know. I remember him tweeting about it.
Must be pretty exciting. I'm assuming that he's going to win a car.
Yeah.
Jimmy, you know about this. Have we talked about this on the show?
We may have mentioned it once or twice, but I don't know if we've talked about
it. Go ahead, tell the story because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'll tell it more in depth when the Rev comes on because it'll be fun to talk about the idea of game shows in general. But I was on The Price is Right back in March of 2 years ago now? Yeah, 2 years ago now. And I went with two of my best buds from college and my girlfriend at the time, and then I got called onto the stage, like second name, as soon as the show started. And then I got all the way up to the Showcase Showdown. And spoiler alert, I won the Showcase Showdown as a pure luck sack. So I won like a car.
So you.
Yeah, no.
Oh, sorry. I stepped on it. You won a what?
A car, a jet ski, and like a houseboat vacation to this lake by Las Vegas. Turns out it also throws your tax bracket into disarray.
Yes, it does.
So I had a fun year that year, thanks to that. Not fun. But it was a lot of fun to be on a game show for once and like to be on The Price is Right, a show I watched all the time growing up. Was very exciting.
You are the luckiest person I know because only you of all the people I know would go to Price is Right, get called on stage, then not just that, actually win. Pretty awesome. I'm assuming that's going to happen for Rev also.
I hope so. Well, he's definitely going to be on stage, right? He's a guaranteed contestant. He's going to get to spin the wheel.
Presumably guess at whatever the phrase or whatever is.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Spinning the wheel has to be one of those like lifetime bucket list goals, even if you just go and do it for fun and not on the show.
Yeah. I mean, I even like doing it just in Vegas at the slot machine, so it must be really awesome if you're actually,
Yeah, and that thing's huge. That thing's like the size of a, I don't know, It's like 10 feet wide.
So make sure to tune in next week where we actually do have Rev on the show. He'll talk about that, and also he's a big EDH player.
Yeah.
So the topic we're going to cover today is something we don't do very often, and we sort of thought of it because I know when I listen to other podcasts, they'll do this type of thing. We don't tell a lot of stories from our actual gameplay, and so we thought it would be fun to tell some quote-unquote tall tales, some EDH stories just of things that we have come across, either that we've done ourselves or we've seen other players pull off, not necessarily that are even game-winning.
Yeah.
But just some stories. So this will be a quick one. Again, Jimmy's a little bit sick, and we've got more meat when Rev comes on next week. So, but
in the meantime, yeah, we have some exciting news. Episode 100 is coming up. A lot of you guys have sent us fun ideas for it, and a couple of you hit the nail on the head on what we sort of plan on doing, which is a live show.
A live stream.
Yeah. So we're saying live stream because we're going to stream the show, but we're also going to release it like a regular episode. But this is going to be an awesome opportunity for you guys to tune in and see Josh and myself, our faces, and we'll have a show and we'll talk to the people in chat. We'll answer questions and we'll find some cool, fun stuff to do that's live and that involves a camera that we normally would not be able to do.
Yeah, we're not exactly sure 100% everything that's going to go on within the live show, but you will be able to tune in. There will be some cool stuff that we don't normally do. But again, if you can't tune into the live stream, then it will be released as a podcast episode. Now, that episode may be a little bit weird compared to our normal content.
Yeah.
We think it'll be a lot of fun. Right now, the date, so you can mark it on your calendar, because we would love for you to tune in when we're doing it. It looks like we're going to be recording the live stream on March 12th, which is a Saturday.
Yep, and we're not sure what time yet. We're on the West Coast in the U.S., so obviously we want to do a time that works best for everyone because we know we have a lot of international listeners as well. So we'll figure out something that works best for you guys. If you guys have a recommendation for a time that is just universally good across the continent, like it's 5 p.m. somewhere at this time, you know, I don't know, just let us know. Tweet at us.
Yeah, tweet and let us know if you're going to tune in and what times would be good.
Yeah.
We have another kind of cool thing that happened. Well, actually, okay, it's, yeah, it's that's a weird way to put it. There's actually a crappy thing that happened, but a cool response. So we got an email last week from the fiance of one of our listeners. Now, her name is Sarah Solman, and she emailed us and said that the couple's apartment was robbed, and all of her fiance's magic cards were stolen.
Dang, that sucks.
It's the worst. In fact, I've had this happen to me.
Yeah. Not all of your magic cards were stolen, though.
But a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, my binders were stolen specifically. I think that the thieves, when they broke into my house, they found some cash. They took an iPad, some other stuff. And I have that mountain of sealed product, which was not that big at this time. It was a couple years ago.
The volcano was still growing.
Yeah.
I did that because you're from Hawaii. Or you lived in Hawaii, close enough.
And so, but they did grab some binders, which had like dual lands and, you know, there's quite a bit of stuff in there. And it's the worst feeling. Like getting your card stolen is a very bad feeling.
Such a violation.
Yeah. It's horrible. So Sarah emailed us just to say that her fiance was a fan of the show and what happened. And she, you know, she said to us, I don't even know if there's anything you can do, but he's a big fan of your show. And I want to know what I can maybe do to help him get back on his feet. And she was saying that he's so disappointed that she can't even talk him into really wanting to go to the store and buy cards to replace it.
That's one of the hardest things to do is to get to, I already spent the money before. I don't want to go back and do it again. And
yeah, it just feels bad. The funny part of her email, she goes, all I really know is that the leader of his favorite deck was a goat man who gave everyone else presents. So we all knew who that is. Zedru,
yeah. That is a goat man. Sounds, by the way, crazy if you ever just have that sense out of context. A goat man who gave everyone else presents sounds like Lucifer. Like, sounds like the freaking demon.
It's true, actually.
No, it's Zedru the great-hearted. He's a big heart.
So, speaking of big heart, we reached out to Card Kingdom.
Woo.
Card Kingdom is a big magic retailer. They're also a very big store up in your neck of the woods, Jimmy, yes. Up in Seattle. And we told them the story, and they agreed to donate a $100 gift card to Sarah's fiance. His name is Kevin Perkins, to help him start to rebuild his collection. So Kevin, It should be, by the time you're hearing this, in the mail on the way to you. Courtesy, again, of cardkingdom.com. And hopefully that'll help you get back on your feet, man. We hope you can pick up Zedru and, you know.
You could get, like, four of the precons as well.
There you go.
You could turn one deck into four right there. Although I have no idea how much.
Yeah, he probably had more than that. But, you know, it was a really nice gesture from Card Kingdom. You know, when we reached out to them, they were very quick to respond and say, like, totally, you know, we'll help this guy out. And also, for all of our listeners, there's a promo code you can use. It's good until March 1st. So if you go to cardkingdom.com and you use the promo code COMMANDZONE, all one word, you'll receive 5% off any order that includes at least $25 in singles.
Hey, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, just free value right there.
Free value. And it's not like it's free value from anywhere. This is Card Kingdom.
Yeah,
Card Kingdom's great.
Card Kingdom is one of those places that I continuously go to on the list with a lot of the big other retailers. You know, I'm liable to order from Card Kingdom, especially if I want this stuff really fast. That's one of the things that I've noticed about Card Kingdom in general is that they'll get you stuff almost faster than anybody else.
Yeah. And I've been to their physical store. They have two physical stores in Seattle. And if you ever go up to Seattle, you have to make a point of visiting one of their stores because it's a treat. They're amazing. You walk in, it's like wooden floors, wooden bookshelves, smells like board games. There are board games everywhere. You can just rent board games for free from the front desk and take it into Cafe Mox, which is a cafe built into the store that serves drinks and food and beer and everything, and it's super delicious, and you can just play. It's great. I've hung out with Gavin Verhey there. I've hung out with Marshall Sutcliffe there. It's awesome. Like, a lot of these Seattle area players will all go there and play, and they have tons of Magic events. Their entire storehouse for their main store is just upstairs, so you can go on the computer and type in stuff and then get your order immediately. It's great. Store is awesome.
cardkingdom.com. Make sure to check them out. You know, they're shown that they've got a big heart, just like Zedru.
Yeah, that's nice. Nice. Good one. Yeah, so hopefully, Kevin, that helps you out. And then for the listeners, if you guys order some singles, just remember promo code COMMANDZONE. One word.
Yeah, it's good until March 1st. So if you've got some singles that you're looking to need soon, you might as well get 5% extra off on them. So,
and you will probably get them by the time we record our live episode, 100th episode on March 12th. Don't forget to mark that down as well, guys.
Your calendars are just going to be all full of Command Zone stuff.
Yeah, that's what mine looks like sometimes.
Well, two things. Yeah. Well, yeah, ours has okay. on to the main topic, EDH stories, tall tales.
Tall tales.
Cool stuff.
Cool stuff. Fun stuff. It's true. We don't really talk about our games so much. We talk about situations a lot. Occasionally we'll mention, like, oh, this happened, and then as a response, this happened. Sometimes episodes will be based off of an event that happened. But we don't... I mean, Commander's a fun game, and sometimes we get broiled up in the... I guess some people call it... The smaller details of it. I think when we had the article published on the Mothership, talking about favorite podcasts, it was great. It was sort of like, these guys are a bit spiky, but I can't stop listening to them. I was like, oh, thanks.
This one's for you, Bruce Richard.
Yeah, Bruce.
Is it Bruce Richard or Bruce Richard?
Bruce Richard. That's like the French version of his name.
Yeah, it seems like it should be Bruce Richard. But also, if you have two, have you noticed that, like, all superheroes have just two first names as their name?
Oh, yeah, that's
right. You know, Bruce Wayne, Peter Parker. Huh. You know, it's just like a thing that... So anyway.
I like it.
So he's either Bruce Richard, the non-superhero, or Bruce Richard, the superhero. I think he would prefer...
Bruce Richard.
Yeah, I mean, superhero.
It's also pretty sweet. I love the double first name. Neither of us have it, unfortunately. Well, I guess Lee kind of counts.
But yeah, not really. yeah, going back to the story thing, you know, one of the fun things about EDH, one of maybe the most fun things, is you list out all the cards and you put them in front of you and you cut them and you make your deck and you have all these ideas of how I'm going to get this card and this card together, and then when I get this third card, this crazy thing will happen. And then what's awesome is you get these cards and you're like, holy cow, I never even thought of this, but this is about to happen.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know, and a lot of my favorite stories come from those moments, the moments where I didn't even think about those two cards. You know, this card's supposed to work with this other one and this other card's supposed to work with this other one, but then all of a sudden I get them both in my hand, and I'm like, wait a minute, this crazy thing will happen. I didn't even think about it until this moment.
That's true, and I think you actually build your decks to have that happen more often than not. Sort of the, oh gosh, have I gone infinite question?
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because both of us, I'm looking at the stories, don't really have to do with going infinite. Or in fact, I think almost all of my stories, maybe one, aren't even about winning the game.
Yeah, none of mine are about winning the game, actually.
Which is funny because when you tell stories about EDH and Magic in general, it's often like that. You'd think you'd tell the story, and then I double-striked my guy, put Eldrazi Constriction, swung, and killed him. But you don't tell that story. You tell the story of like, and then I played this, and then I played this, and then this happened, and it's like, and then what? Oh, I don't even remember who won. Like but that's cool. That's just that cool thing that happened.
Right. I mean, we build our decks so that we can have fun playing them. Not necessarily winning. I mean, someone that plays like a Feldegrift deck isn't looking to win necessarily, but just have fun and see what kind of interactions happen around the table. I think it's great whenever you play your Chromat deck because everyone's drawing a billion cards, and the potential for like an EDH story to erupt from that is way higher because once you give everyone all the possibilities in their hands, then anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
All right. All right. Start off with one?
Sure. So I'm going to set the stage.
Set it.
This story takes place at Comic-Con 2014. I believe it was 2014. Yeah, 2014. So this was the year that Conspiracy came out. In fact, we had just started the podcast.
Yep, and we had Gavin Verhey as a guest.
Yeah, so this was the night before we recorded that episode with Gavin. I think Gavin ended up being on like episode 9, but we actually recorded it before we even released any episodes, I think. Or no, I think we'd released like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah, we were just in with our Conspiracy set review.
Yeah, and Gavin was supposed to be like our big, we got a Wizards of the Coast person, and he was going to talk a little bit about Khans of Tarkir, which was not out yet.
Yeah, it was actually being announced and talked about at that Comic-Con.
And then what happened is we interviewed him about Khans of Tarkir, and Wizards found out, and they were like, we got to listen to the podcast before and okay it before it can go out. And we're like, okay.
Well, Gavin was like, I got to make sure they okay it first. And it was like, yeah, of course, absolutely.
So we gave it to Wizards, and then they just didn't check it for like a few weeks. So by the time it came out, none of the information was cool or everybody knew everything.
It was still pretty
cool. We had Gavin, but I'm just saying, like, we were like, yeah, not that he gave anything away, but we were, anyway.
It was exciting to have Gavin on at the end of the day, but we just wish we could have released it a little more timely.
Yeah. So anyway, we were at Comic-Con waiting in line for the black foil Planeswalker card. So if you don't know, every year at Comic-Con, Hasbro has a booth inside the convention center, and they have a limited amount of a special kind of Magic card, and it's always a cycle of Planeswalkers, but they're in black foil. So
looks so cool.
It looks very cool. So if you've probably seen these cards, they're just all black, and they just have this nice little foiling to them. You really have to look at them if you actually want to read them.
Yeah.
The value's very high. They sell out very fast. So we're actually waiting in line overnight. So you have to wait in line with another 10,000 people who aren't necessarily all buying stuff from the Hasbro booth, but that the lines combined for all the retailers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were there with a bunch of friends, and Jimmy and I had the great idea to bring a table.
Woo-hoo.
With and some lanterns
and
some boxes of Conspiracy.
We've set a trend.
Yep, and draft. Like, if we're going to be sitting in line all night, we're going to draft Conspiracy. So we were there with that, and we also played games of EDH. So here I am. I'm in a game with, I know Craig was in the game.
Probably Kessler.
Kessler might have been there, or maybe Gavin.
I don't think I was.
No, I think you were in the game to the right. Anyway, I know Craig was there because he's sitting directly to my left, and I remember this affected him. So somehow during the course of the game, I get in my hand Memory Jar, Cyclonic Rift, and Brainstorm. So what I decide to do is let me read Memory Jar, because it's the card that maybe people are the most likely to not know what it does. So Memory Jar is an artifact. It costs 5. You can tap and sacrifice the Memory Jar, and then each player exiles all the cards from their hand face down and then draws 7 cards. And then at the beginning of the next end step, each player discards those 7 cards they drew and then returns the hand that they used to have. So you sort of take your hand, set it aside, draw 7 more, just until the next end step.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good card because it basically draws you 7 cards, but it only draws everybody else their instance and whatever mana they've got available, because you're going to do it at a time when, you know, during your main phase maybe.
Yeah.
And so I play out Memory Jar, And then when my turn comes back around, remember, I have Cyclonic Rift and Brainstorm. So what I do is I activate the memory jar, and in response, I brainstorm the Cyclonic Rift onto the top of my library.
Very nice.
So now I put my hand aside, and I make sure I'm going to draw the Cyclonic Rift. And now when I overload the Cyclonic Rift, it bounces all my opponent's permanent non-land permanents back to their hand. But don't forget, Memory Jar says at the end of turn, you're going to discard your hand and draw your old card. So every so all their non-land permanents went to their hand, and then on my end step, they had to discard them all.
That is brutal.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. It was a sort of a nice confluence of events, right, to have the brainstorm
like
to set it up
board
and whatever.
Wipe for everything but you.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost every single permanent is, yeah, every non-land permanent. Holy crap.
Yeah, it was, I remember, you
had to have won that game.
Yeah, I did win that game.
Okay.
I just remember Craig being like, yeah. And then I was like, okay. And then I was like, pass turn. Oh, you have to discard all the cards in your hand. And they were like, what? So
that's amazing.
That was a good feeling. And the fact that it happened in line at Comic-Con.
That's a wombo combo that you should just always have.
I mean, it's so hard to set it up though, right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, other times you can just hope that you draw a Cyclonic Rift with your memory jar or something that, like, an upheaval type effect bounces everything to their hands.
Yeah, it's true. Memory jar, you just often don't want it to sit there for too long because if somebody destroys it, there's not a lot, you know. You usually want to use it pretty quickly.
Yeah, you'll find that Storm deck's actually like a card like this as
well. Because you play a bunch of cards, then activate it, draw seven new ones, play those cards. Yeah,
yeah, refilling your hand is very important in sort of like the Legacy Cube Storm decks. My first story is one that I tell often on the show, but don't actually talk about.
It's sort of infamous.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because there's more parts to this that I haven't really discussed before, and it's the story of the Everlasting Cryptic Command. the Cryptic Command that could, that got cast about 8 times in a game where it should have only been cast once. I was playing, I think, with our friend Daniel D and Matt Arnold. I don't know if I was playing with you.
I wasn't there. I only heard about this story secondhand.
Craig may have been there as well, but this is back when neither of those two guys play anymore. Maybe I Cryptic Commanded them out of EDH entirely. I doubt it. Actually, D is one of the first people to introduce me to the game as well. But I got a Cryptic Command, and I'm like, this is the best counterspell ever made. I was playing, I believe, my Jaleva, my hell of a deck, and at one point, D likes a lot of creature-based decks, and a lot of them are just, you know, they'll swing with 80 zombies and just kill you with 80 tutus. And he kept looking at me. I'm like, I have Cryptic Command. I'm going to tell you this, and if you go to attack me, like, I'm going to tap it all down, or I'm just going to, you know.
Basically, you do the thing where before he goes to combat, you'll hold on who you're going to attack.
Yeah.
And if he said you, you could tap them all down.
But the thing is, at the time, I didn't realize the rules clarification that someone could... we were sort of playing it loosely where someone would go like, all right, combat, I'm going to swing at you. We wouldn't even say combat. Be like, okay, I'm going to swing at you. And then you'd be like, hold on, I'm going to tap all your guys down. technically, you're supposed... Because, you know, you have to go through the phases and pass the priority around. You would have to do it before the attackers are declared. So you don't really know who they're going to attack. You're just sort of basing it on their promise to you.
But you can use that sort of honor equity, right? People will rarely just boldface lie to you. And if they do, then from then on, you can sort of never trust them.
Yeah, exactly. They really set themselves back if they do that. So I did this to him, and he was like, okay, fine. I just don't swing at anyone. And he passed the turn to the next person, who also had a lot of creatures. And this just continued around the table multiple times. And every time when they went to combat, I'd be like, I'll tap them all down. Like, you just waste a turn, then everyone can kill you. So everyone was like, okay, fine, I won't attack. And I somehow prolonged my life in a deck that doesn't play any creatures whatsoever, all thanks to Cryptic Command. And I did it, I don't know, 6 times or something, until someone finally realized that you just have to force me to use it. And then at that point...
And then it's open season, yeah.
It's open season, yeah. But no one, I think... We were all pretty new to the game at that point. At least I was, and Matt was as well, that we were all just like, oh, this is total BS. Fine, Jimmy, do it. Fine. I won't swing at you. Fine.
I remember, because at that time I was working at Rocket Jump, and I remember coming in the next day, and Matt was like, first thing was like, come here. I got to tell you something. And he like laid out the hole. He's like, and then nobody would attack him. And I was like, just attack him because it'll make him use it every time that you don't attack. Then he basically got to use it for free, and he was like so upset even the next day.
It was beautiful. And the reason that that story is great is because it set a precedent. And the next time we played, I had Cryptic Command mana, but did not have Cryptic Command. I managed to do it again like 2 more times in 2 more rotations. And people got so upset. Finally, someone was like, okay, you guys won't do it. I will. And by that point, I'd actually drawn it. So I tapped all their stuff down, and they were furious. And they didn't know that I just bold-faced lied to them for two turns saying I had it and I would do it again. So that was, like, the biggest risk I think I've ever taken in EDH, because if I had been called out on that bluff and shown that I didn't have it, it would be like our skit, our kitchen table fable.
Yeah, exactly. Prof. And then no one would trust you ever again.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at you, tricky. Yeah, it's funny how in playgroups, those type of stories, because that story is sort of like, it's like a myth in our playgroup, right?
Yeah.
And so it's also a lesson that our entire playgroup has learned from that those one instance. So that type of thing doesn't work as good as maybe it used to, because that story grew to be, you know,
yeah,
sort of a legend. And those moments are good in your playgroup because they'll teach the entire playgroup, like, yeah, you gotta make them use it. Otherwise, you know, you're just a slave to it for the rest of the game for free.
Now, if you're conniving, you can also have that be to your benefit.
For
you're
sure.
Like, oh, great. This guy's holding the whole table down. Everyone's just focusing on that. I'm just going to keep doing my thing.
And yep.
I'll
be not threatening over here. He's the bad guy.
Yeah, exactly. I was the bad guy in that case.
Pretty funny. Okay. My next one involves Joyra and suspending things. So if you don't know, what happens is Joyra can give any card suspend or any permanent, or no, any spell suspend. Yeah. And you basically activate her ability, and then you exile the card with four suspend counters on it. And then during your upkeep, you remove one of the suspend counters, and once it has zero, you cast it, and if it's a creature, it has haste. So Joyra decks generally want to play a lot of really expensive cards because you're going to get them for the same price no matter what. You're going to get them in four turns, basically. And also, mm-hmm. you play a lot of things that sort of give you extra upkeeps or take suspend counters off, so you sort of get the stuff faster than the four turns anyway. So we were playing with, I believe it was Kessler. No, it was Craig and Josh Kim and somebody else.
Oh, this happened recently.
Yeah, and I had in suspend, I had It That Betrays, which is a 12-drop Eldrazi. It has Annihilator 2, which is not key to the story. But it also says, whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token permanent, put that card onto the battlefield under your control. So if anybody else sacrifices anything that's not a token, any permanent, you basically get that.
Nice. Yeah, it's similar to Grave Betrayal, kind of, where it's like, if that thing goes away, then you get it. In this case, it's very specifically sacrificed, and it pairs well with Annihilator.
Correct. Yeah, because when you attack, they have to sacrifice things. That's what Annihilator says, and then you get that stuff. And then I also suspended Destructive Force, which is a red sorcery. It costs 5 and 2 red, and it says each player sacrifices 5 lands, and then Destructive Force deals 5 damage to each creature.
Is this meant specifically to pair with It That Betrays?
It is. It's also just like Joyra likes land destruction, because you suspend like 7 things, and then you Love have a land world. Destruction thing come out, but your suspend stuff is still just sitting there as Ticking Time Bomb that's just going to like come out eventually. So it works really well. But what happened is I suspended those 2 things, and then when 2 things come off suspend at the same time, so if your upkeep happens and then you have 2 cards with 1 suspend counter on them, they'll both go to 0, and then you get to stack them, and they come out in the order that you want. So I had It That Betrays enter the battlefield, and then Destructive Force resolved, making everybody sack 5 lands and then dealing 5 damage to each creature. It That Betrays is a 11-11, so it doesn't care about taking 5 damage. And then they all had to sack 5 lands, but I get 5 lands from each of them. Jeez. I had to sack 5 lands too. So at the end of it, I actually have like more lands than I started with. You know, I start
net 15 lands or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have start with 8. I've sacked 5. I'm at 3, but then now I have 18 lands, and they all have like 2 lands each. So that was like a cool, and everybody's just like,
You won that game.
I did not win this game.
What? You had 18 lands.
I had 18 lands.
I mean, they don't tap for the mana you want them to, but.
Yeah, no, somebody managed to get rid of It That Betrays, and then I just didn't draw business, and then, you know, of course, everyone's mad at me, so they ganged up on me from that point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, Andy Belford was in the game, our friend that works at Riot. And he was playing Zedru, coincidentally. And he gave me that enchantment that when it leaves the battlefield, deals 20 damage to you. So
you got wrecked.
So a lot of things happened when he did that. Because, first of all, he gave it to me. And I was like, I need to kill him first. Like, at that point, he was the biggest threat. But I couldn't. Because as soon as I killed him, I would die. Because I was at 16 life. even though everybody else only had two or three lands.
Because the enchantment would leave the battlefield.
So if I killed him, the enchantment would leave the battlefield and it would kill me. And then the other, you know, so then it was like, oh, I can't go after the main threat. And then, you know, somebody else had, like, eventually what happened is he Oblivion Ringed his own enchantment to kill to do the 20 damage to me. Yeah, so that was just like...
Well, too bad, Josh. Blowing up everyone's lands and taking them, and you died.
And I died, but it was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I love that betrays. I wish I could play the more decks because I think it's just
it's awesome. Hilarious. It just costs 12 mana, so it's hard to...
Exactly. My next story is from one... I think the first time I ever played EDH.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I call it the ooze that could. I was playing again at my friend D's house, Daniel, and he had a few decks, and I forget who else was there, but it was him, his girlfriend at the time, and a couple, maybe one other person, and they were about to sit down and play EDH, and I was just over there, and he said, hey, I'll give you a deck. You know how to play Magic, right? I'm like, yeah, I remember. I hadn't played since I was like 8.
So this is the moment that hooked you. This is the whole reason this podcast exists.
This is one of the first initial moments. There are 4 or 5, and I'll mention another one of the moments in another story tonight. But yeah, this is like one of the first things that got me going like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. I like it. And he gave me a deck. I think it was Sigarda, so it was a Voltron deck, and he had Predator Ooze in the deck. And Predator Ooze is a 1/1 creature ooze that costs green, 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 and it says Predator Ooze is indestructible. And whenever Predator Ooze attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Whenever a creature dealt damage by Predator Ooze dies this turn, put a +1/+1 counter on Predator Ooze. So it's just this indestructible 1/1 that just grows and grows and keeps attacking. And it's a really fun card, especially in the Voltron deck, because it's just another target for all your equipment. And I think I just didn't cast Sigarda that game because I had Predator Ooze on the battlefield. I'm like, man, this thing is crazy. Indestructible. Nothing can kill it. So I had Sword of Cauldra. I had... Moonsilver Spear. I had a bunch of equipments. At one point, this Predator Ooze was like a 9/9, just crazy indestructible, swinging in every turn and just forcing people to chump block. And I was like, this is great. I love I was just laughing out loud, and everyone else was that there's just this ooze.
It's just slowly consuming everything,
yeah, but also not really able to hold equipment, just having like a sword sticking out of its side and just wildly flailing and slashing at stuff.
That's a Kitchen Table Fables episode.
Yeah, exactly. It was just this ridiculous image to me, and what ended up happening is it died, and I was in disbelief because I thought this thing literally couldn't die because it said indestructible, and it's one of the first lessons I learned is that if you take its toughness under 0, it dies because it got Tragic Slipped. And then that was even funnier to me because Tragic Slip, if it has Morbid, so if a creature died this turn, it gets you can give a creature -13/-13. And I think my ooze was just about up to 11/11 or something, right about the edge where it couldn't die from a Tragic Slip. And we just love the image again of this ooze with all this stuff. It just slipped and then impaled itself somehow, or it was like taking a bath or something silly and just died. So that was like one of the first memories I have of EDH. One of the reasons I love the format, because it just puts crazy situations together and has very funny imagery if you just sit and look at what's happening on the battlefield sometimes.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Kitchen Table Fables actually has a lot of truth and origins from a lot of what we've done.
Yeah, exactly. Just looking around and being like, if that was actually happening in the game world, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, it'd be absolutely nuts.
Yeah. All right, one more story. Mine, it started with the card Burgeoning.
Have we mentioned this card on Pet Cards or anything at all?
Burgeoning?
Was it on our...
it's in our Mana episode? Bases episode, I believe. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of expensive, so I don't know if it's really a pet card.
Oh, right, right.
You know, I think a lot more people would run this if they could afford it. It's not cheap. So Burgeoning is a 1 green for an enchantment. It says whenever any opponent plays a land, you may choose a land card from your hand and put it into play. So in EDH, very powerful because it scales so well with more players. It's kind of like Exploration, but better, because you might play 4 lands on your first turn. It's actually probably closer to Fast Bond than it is to Burgeoning, and Fast Bond is, as we know, Exploration. Banned.
Yeah, Burgeoning's very powerful.
Yeah, super, super good. It's not for every deck. You need a certain amount of card draw and whatever to take advantage of it, because a lot of times you'll play a Burgeoning and then have 3 lands in your hand, and you'll play them on the first turn, but then it's like, if you don't have anything to use, you'll be a couple turns ahead maybe.
Yeah.
But if you don't have card draw, you won't continue to, you know, then you won't play a land because you won't have one in your hand. And so by three turns, you're just where you would have been.
Yeah, it's just not as significant as a deck that's like blue-green.
Right.
You can just draw 1,000 cards and then use...
Yeah, when you can draw a lot of cards, then it's just very powerful, especially because it costs one green. So if you play it on turn one, two, or three, people can't afford to just not play lands.
Yeah, exactly. So, and compare this to a card like Sire of Stagnation.
Yes.
Where it's like, players will still play lands. Sire of Stagnation, you get to draw cards when someone plays a land. At that point, it's a six drop too. People will just stop playing land. But for Burgeoning, you play it on turn one.
And they'll wait because it's a creature, right? So they'll be, Sire of Stagnation, I mean. So they'll be like, can you kill it? And you'll be like, yeah. And they'll be like, okay, I'll just won't play a land this one turn. And then somebody will kill it. And then they'll play their lands. Whereas Burgeoning, it's an enchantment. So it's just way less likely it's going to go anywhere. And also, people aren't, do they really want to use their enchantment removal on it? Like, anyway, it's a very good card. So it starts with this. I played it on my main phase. And then I pass the turn, and then during my opponent's upkeep, I cast Sunder. So Sunder is just it's a blue instant. It's 3/2 blue, and it says return all lands to their owner's hand. So it's sort of like the blue version of Armageddon, except for that you don't destroy the lands. They just go back to their hand. So what happens with Burgeoning, and the reason I played it on my opponent's upkeep, is I didn't want to have a bunch of cards in my hand that I have to discard during my discard phase. So when I wait till my opponent's upkeep, and also he hasn't played a land yet this turn, so now he goes, okay, plays a land, I play a land. He can't do anything, pass turn. Next player plays a land, I play a land. Next player plays a land, I play a land. Next player plays a land, I play a land. Comes back to my turn, I got six lands in play.
Yeah, pretty good.
They all got one. Yeah, I did not win this game.
How does that happen?
The funny thing is, because it only got rid of lands, you know, some people styled some permanents other things, and they were able to get back. And of course, like with It That Betrays, it makes everybody turn to you and be like, well, screw that guy.
Yeah.
Because also, when you do Sunder, they all have to discard, because they're all holding like 8 or 9 lands plus their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And because they can only play one land, they can't really play any cards out of their hand, and now they have to discard like 7 or 8 cards. Everyone's mad at you. But it was pretty cool. Again, not something I thought of as a use for Burgeoning, because you usually think of, like, play it on turn one or two, then just play out a lot of extra lands. You don't think of, like, I'm going to bounce everybody's lands and then use that to get the advantage.
Pretty interesting.
I liked it.
I like it, too. I love Burgeoning. That card's very, very crazy.
Sunder, people. Take a look at it. That card is really good.
It's basically mass land destruction.
Yeah, it is, but it doesn't have the same stigma, right? Because it doesn't actually destroy them.
Yeah, when people have it in their hands, they're like, well, I guess I can just play it again.
It doesn't, you know, Armageddon, a lot of times you play Armageddon, if they don't have any lands in their hand, they might not even be able to play a land the next turn. At least this way, they're like, okay.
Sunder's also at least
see in my I can at least see in my hand how to get back into it.
Yeah. Okay, my third story. This one is sad and totally on me. So we are playing
Secret Partners,
right? And there's a lone wolf, and what that means is that out of the five players, two of them are face up and know that they're playing against each other. Two of them are face down and know that they're on the teammate. They're teammates with one of the face up people, and there's one person that's a lone wolf that knows that it's up to them to be the last person saying to win the game. I looked at my card. I was like, I'm the lone wolf. I put it back down. It's like, sweet. I'm going to play this super politically. I'm going to find one of the teammates that is face up, and I'm just going to very obviously, but not super obviously, declare that I'm on the same team as them. That way, the other teammate that's face down won't necessarily be like, wait, hold on, that person's not their teammate, because I know I'm their teammate. They'll think more, okay, fine, that person's a lone wolf or whatever, but I won't do anything to disrupt this, because it essentially means that it's 3v2.
Right.
And then we'll find a way to ice them, because then there'll be 2v1 when it comes down to it. So, like, great, it's perfect. I'll find a way to just ice that person. And I believe the face-up person was Andy, and I was like, sweet, Andy, I'm your teammate. I'm going to show it to you in different ways across the game. And Craig was the actual person that was Andy's teammate. And Craig was just looking very confused the whole time because of what I was doing. I don't think Craig fully understood what was going on, because what ended up happening is after 40 minutes of intense gameplay, I was like, sweet, I'm going to win this whole game. Craig comes out and murders both of us because it turns out I read my card incorrectly. I was Andy's teammate the whole time, and I'd just been giving Craig, the lone wolf, a free pass because he figured out what I was trying to do and just jumped ship and did my strategy against me and ended up winning the whole game.
So you were actually thought you weren't on Andy's team, but were
but
on Andy's team?
I was.
Team?
And by the end, I started doing things that totally started screwing Andy over. Yeah, because I was like, I'm going to win now, so I have to beat both of you guys. And I just ended up totally screwing myself because I looked at my card, and it was, I think there was supposed to be, like, if it was a planes and it matched the color, because sometimes we do matching colors of cards, and I just didn't get the memo on what the split was.
Or you just glance at it, and it looks like a white card, but it's actually a blue card.
I turned very red, and when I flipped over my card, I was just like, I was like, I was trying to do something, guys, and I messed up. I didn't admit to them at the time that I just completely 100% did not know what I was doing.
I would have just been like, dang, lost that one, and then never speak of it. I would never have revealed.
Move on immediately.
I guess Craig would have been like, why were you attacking your partner?
Yeah, Craig had the look on his face, which he does when he knows he got away with something. He was just like kind of like, heh, with that like, devilish grin. I was like, god dang it. I really, really screwed the pooch on that one.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I was not there for that one.
No, I'm glad you're not, because I would never have lived that down. Oh, it was awful.
Ugh. All right, well, that's going to do our Tall Tales for this time. Let us know how you like this format, because obviously we could do this from time to time, not something we normally do. And time for To the Listeners.
Oh, yeah.
What's your favorite EDH story?
And this will probably be easier for you to tell us on a YouTube comment,
rocketjump.com,
or on rocketjump.com/thecommandzone, or by emailing us at commandcast@rocketjump.com.
Yeah, and if you can tweet it, that's fine too.
Yeah, if you can find a way to like emoji it out and get it under 140 characters, like
I'll be impressed.
You. Yeah, very impressed. Actually, I just thought of another one.
Do it.
Notion Thief. Alex Kessler played Notion Thief once.
I remember this.
And then someone else had Consecrated Sphinx out. And Notion Thief reads, I think he actually flashed it out in response to someone drawing cards off Consecrated Sphinx and didn't realize it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. We were like, wait a minute.
Because Notion Thief reads, it's a creature. It says, if an opponent would draw a card except for the first one he or she draws in each of his or her draw steps, instead that player skips that draw and you draw a card. And Consecrated Sphinx says, whenever an opponent draws a card, you may draw two cards. So it's just an immediate infinite loop where as long as the Consecrated Sphinx player goes, oh yeah, every time they draw a card, I'm going to try and draw two cards, the Notion Thief player immediately mills themselves out.
Yeah, because the Notion Thief goes, oh, you're about to draw a card? You don't. I draw two cards. And the Consecrated Sphinx player goes, okay, well then, because you drew two cards, I'll draw four cards. And then the Notion Thief is not a May ability. It says, oh, well then I draw four cards. And the Consecrated Sphinx player goes, oh, you draw four? I'm going
to
draw eight.
I'm going to try to draw eight.
Yeah. And then the Notion Thief player goes, no, because I take those and I draw eight. And then they just mill themselves out. Yeah.
Yeah. And Kessler was like, oh, sweet, I'm going to use this Notion Thief to draw extra cards off you, and you don't get to draw them instead. And then he almost immediately after went, okay, I'm going to take that card out of all my decks now.
That reminds me, okay, I've got another one, of we were in, this was at GP Vegas. Actually, the Notion Thief, was that at GP Vegas too?
No, I think that was at Kessler's old office.
Okay. We were at GP Vegas, and I don't remember, I think we were playing with, oh man, Peyton Bullis, maybe Eves.
Okay.
Sorry if it wasn't you guys or if it was somebody else, I forget. But you got a Consecrated Sphinx out, and somebody else got a Consecrated Sphinx out.
Oh yeah.
And you guys looked at each other with these huge smiles, and we're like, "You want to draw?" And they're like, "Yeah, I'll draw." And then you guys are just like, drew 40 cards each or something. You know, you had these huge hands, and your deck only had like 30 cards left, and you guys are just giggling, and you're like, "You want to draw more?" And he was like, "No, I'm good." And you're like, "Hold on, Drew, I'll draw a couple more." Okay, I'm good. And then
I believe it was me, actually. I think I was playing a dragon deck. Or this happened twice at GP Vegas. That could very much have happened as well.
Yeah, and then I go, but everybody was tapped out, and it went to my turn, and I go, Molten Psyche?
Oh, yeah. I was
and
never
just
that.
Killed you both.
That is hilarious. Molten Psyche, by the way, it just says, this deals, each player shuffles the cards from his or her hand into their library, then you draw that many cards.
And then if you have Metalcraft, which is you have at least three artifacts, they take damage for each card they've drawn this turn.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's brutal.
Took like 50 damage each. And I was like, you guys just flew too close to the sun.
Hey, but you know, if you're going to fly, you may as well fly really close to the sun.
Yeah, exactly.
As the red player of the group. That's great. That reminded me of another one at GP Vegas. I was playing with the Rev and a couple other players. I forgot who they are. I'm so sorry if I forgot your name. But I flipped over Felden, and the Rev flipped over Zirlin of the Claw. And then the two other players also flipped over Mono Red Commanders.
So it was just four
mono red players going against each other.
That's like your dream.
It was my dream, and I didn't win, but I was like, I'm never having my enchantments removed ever. I think one got Chaos Warped.
Was it Blood Moon? Probably not.
No, yeah, right? Blood Moon is just the worst card in that matchup. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. GB Vegas is actually the source of a lot of really fun stories.
Yeah, GB Vegas is awesome.
Yeah, can't wait for the next one.
All right, time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Do you have anything?
Yeah, actually, there's a book that came out. It is a Del Rey book. I talked about this series, and this is the third book in the series. It's called Morningstar that I've been enjoying. And the first two books are called Red Rising and Golden Sun.
Right.
And we've given these
away, actually.
Yeah, we gave Red Rising away. So Morningstar is the third book in the series. I really enjoy the series. It's kind of like Ender's Game meets Hunger Games meets Harry Potter meets Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, I love Bell's.
Meets blah, blah, blah. Anyway, yep. So that's a book that I've been reading. If you like sort of sci-fi, Ender's Game is one of my favorite books of all time. The movie was horrible, but the book's, the book's so great. So it's just right in my wheelhouse. Anyway, I would highly recommend the series. Start with Red Rising. And if you've already read the other two and you didn't know, the third book is out. Morningstar. Cool. Check it out.
Speaking of Harry Potter, there's another Harry Potter book coming out.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
I mean, we all knew this was going to happen, right?
Harry Potter and the Cash Grab.
Like, at some point, they were going to drive a truck full of money up to J.K. Rowling's house.
A truck? We're talking, like, cruise ship.
Yeah. Well, they drove a truck, and she goes, no. And then they drove two trucks, and she said, no. And then they were like, how about this cruise ship full? And then she was like,
can we invite you down to the harbor, yeah. Miss Rowling? She's like, I live on this island I own, sure. And it was surrounded by cruise ships loaded with the euro.
Yeah, and she's like,
pound.
She's like, okay.
All right, fine.
She's like, all right. That's my British accent.
All right.
My Scottish is slightly better.
I will write Harry Potter and Harry the Potter. Cursed Child.
Well, and there's that movie, the...
Fantastical Beasts and Where to Find Them with Eddie Redmayne. It's actually a play as well.
It's a play?
Yeah, I think it started as a play maybe, and then J.K. It was like based on the story, and then J.K. Rowling made it. It was like, all right, I'll write a book.
I might as well make another billion.
I might as well.
Why not?
Yeah, don't be offended by our awesome accents, guys, please.
I mean, it's not our Scottish.
I grew up on Harry Potter. The favorite part about this, though, is they said, like, don't worry, we're going to digitally release the book the same time that's physically released, so you don't need to, go camp out at the bookstore if you don't want to and then have someone scream, Snape kills Dumbledore or whatever.
Yes.
Have you seen that video?
Yes.
It's like, that's like OG internet.
that was very early on in sort of the viral phenomenon, as it were. It's great. You know what's great? I always take away from that is like people were hopefully still are and were willing to wait in line all night for a book.
Yeah. A book. That's sweet. Awesome.
That means J.K. Rowling is my hero because.
Yeah, you did something good there.
Yeah. So enjoy your cruise ship full of money.
I would like to take a cruise on it at some point. I don't care that the pools are filled with money.
Speaking of money, our good friends over at our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern, have started a Patreon.
Oh, yes. So, I was like, wondering where you're going with that. I was like, are they their money? I was like, right, Patreon.
Money. Get back. I think this song we have also done before. Man, we're starting to repeat songs left and right.
We're like old fogies that can't remember what they've done in the past.
What happened?
Did I tell you that story where I held up Cryptic Command once? Have I told that one before?
All right, sorry. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, the Masters of Modern. It is Modern season is in full effect. The Modern Pro Tour just happened. It was awesome. Eldrazi took over the world, everything. One of the guys from our local store, Andrew Brown, was in the top eight of PT Oath of the Gatewatch. I've actually beat Andrew in a PTQ once, and then I lost to him in top eight. Forget that second part of the story. So Alex and Ben are just loving it right now. It's like the perfect season for them. All things modern. Everybody's talking about modern. There's the Modern Gauntlet on Magic Online, which I tried out, and that's super fun. So go to @TheMMCast or go to rocketjump.com/podcast, and you'll find them right next to us. They talk about modern as a format. They talk a lot about competitive Magic. They, like I said, they have a Patreon. So if you are a listener of their show, we would encourage you to go give them your support.
Yeah, and Kessler was on the show last week and very correctly called that Eldrazi Mimic was going to be one of the breakout stars of the Modern Pro Tour.
Oh, that reminds me. I got to go sell all my Eldrazi Mimics.
If you look in that box right there, I've got a lot
How
of Eldrazi. I have like six.
Nice.
I opened a lot of packs, and I was like, when at first I was like, another Mimic?
Yeah, exactly.
And now that's I'm like, another Mimic!
That's the thing, because we, Elle and I, have been cracking packs to find Expeditions. And that's how I was too. I was like, ah, Mimics. These Mimics are going to be, they're worthless. They bring the bulk thing. And then after the Modern Pro Tour, I was like, where are all those Mimics?
Yeah,
I
think I'm ready to move my Goblin Dark Dwellers out of their bulk area as well.
Please, somebody play that card.
It's pretty good in Standard, I think. But anyway, Kessler was on our podcast last week. You can find their Patreon at patreon.com/TheMMCast. You can contribute to them for just $2 a month. It's pretty great.
We would encourage you to do it.
Yes. And our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Terry might be moving out to LA soon. Hopefully we can have some EDH Tall Tale Fables with him as well. Be exciting.
Oh, yeah, we got to get him playing a lot more EDH, and then maybe we can get him on the show.
Yeah, that'd be exciting.
He can edit himself.
Oh, boy. That's terrifying.
I used to have to do that, and I hated it.
Yeah, I do too, actually. Every time I do it, I'm like, God, why do I exist?
Why do I sound so stupid?
Everything I'm doing is awful.
What's wrong with my voice?
Yeah. And special thanks, of course, to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card Animations. You can find him at Living Cards MTG. Now would be a good time to pay tribute to an artist that has passed away recently. Jeffrey has animated some of his cards.
Christopher Rush.
Christopher Rush, who is the artist behind Lightning Bolt, the original Brainstorm, Black Lotus. He's the guy that also created all five of the mana symbols. He is the reason that full art lands exist. He told Mark Rosewater about it, that he thought it would be a good idea, and then Mark went and designed the Unhinged set, which I believe was the first appearance of full art lands. So, Christopher Rush, you are an icon. He's been at tons of Grand Prix, signing playmats, being very gracious to fans and signing cards for them.
He's just a legend of the MTG community. Created a lot of the most iconic cards.
Friends with Richard Garfield back in the day.
Yeah, like, very
he goes back to the beginning of Magic the Gathering.
So Jeffrey has animated Black Lotus recently. You can find that at Living Cards MTG. And Jeffrey also did, there was another Magic artist that passed away, Wayne England,
yes,
who was the artist for Cryptic Command. And Jeffrey...
The whole command cycle, actually.
Yeah. Well, yeah, sorry. Cryptic is just the most iconic. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey did an animation, a very cool animation of Cryptic Command that you can find, again, at Living Cards MTG. So we would encourage you to check those out. And, yeah, it's sad to see those guys go.
Yes, rest in peace. Art is one of the main... one of the biggest parts of Magic the Gathering for me.
It's the thing that in your mind that it looks like, right? So
yeah.
When you picture the game in your head... It's that stuff. So.
It's the Predator Ooze with all that equipment popping out of it. That image wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the awesome artists that make this game a reality.
All right, everybody. On that note, thanks for listening.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.